Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. In November, a new show launched on Northumberland 89.7 FM called Conversations Towards Reconciliation with Alderville First Nations Chief Tainar Simpson. It's an opportunity to learn more about the Indigenous community in Northumberland and elsewhere every month. So far, the show includes topics like Indigenous portrayal in movies, games, and TV. There was a chat about the 10th anniversary of the solar farm in Alderville and boil water advisories. Each episode also includes a long list of events and announcements about what's going on in Alderville. In this segment, you will hear about a meeting of all the chiefs from across Canada at the Assembly of First Nations in Ottawa. It was attended by Chief Simpson. You will also learn about something called the duty to consult. It is an important aspect of recognizing land rights, not only across the country and the province, but also locally. You will find out if municipalities in the county are engaging with Alderville when it comes to development and protecting heritage, along with the environment and Indigenous rights. Hello, and welcome to Conversations Towards Reconciliation with Alderville First Nations Chief Tainar Simpson. I'm your host, Robert Washburn. This program is coming to you from the Williams Treaty Territory and Northumberland 89.7 FM. For the next 30 minutes, we will bring you important stories and issues facing Indigenous and non-Indigenous people living here in Northumberland County and across the country. It is your chance to become better informed, more engaged, and empowered as we all move together on the path to reconciliation. So join us for the next step on this journey. I'm delighted to be joined once again by Tainar Simpson, Chief of the Alderville First Nation. Good to see you, Tainar.
Good to see you too, Robert.
I want to start off with the Assembly of First Nations meeting that you were at. I understand you spent a large part of last week at a special meeting of the Assembly of First Nations. Let's begin with, why was this meeting called and its significance?
Well, this was our special chiefs assembly that we hold every couple of years. So this one was important because we were electing a new national chief. And I'm not sure if everyone is aware, there were some issues with the previous national chief and things didn't end also well. And there was a little bit of a dissension amongst people at the AFN. And we were really looking forward to getting everything back on track and electing a new national leader that's going to really stand up for our rights and push our agenda forward.
Did you go in with any expectations around some of the issues you're going to be discussing in the election itself?
Yes, there's a few hot button issues that here in Ontario and especially in Alderville, we were really concerned with, one of them being Bill C-53. So we were looking for candidates to really speak to these issues. I guess Bill C-53 being a very sensitive topic wasn't discussed as much directly as it was indirectly.
So maybe you could explain to us, what is Bill C-53?
Well, Bill C-53 is this new legislation going through the House. It's already had two readings, and it basically grants the rights that First Nations people have to Métis people here in Ontario. And we've taken a little bit of an offense to it because historically there weren't any Métis communities here. But now the government's talking about basically diluting our rights by giving them to Métis people. And to be Métis, all you have to do is self-identify. So we see this as almost like a reverse white paper whereas in the 60s, they were going to take all of the indigenous rights away from indigenous people and make them all equal. This is potentially going the opposite way, where anyone who self-identifies as Métis will gain these rights. And then if everyone has these rights, then really nobody has these rights anymore. So we're very concerned about what this can lead to. They're talking about making treaties with the Métis people, and as well as harvesting rights on our territory. So it's going to effectively change a lot. So it's something that we are having to tackle now.
Métis people have a long and rich history in Canada, and we know of Louis Riel would be the most famous example, but there are many others. What is the relationship then between the historic Métis people and what you're talking about right now?
Yes, so the Red River Métis are what we would know as like the historic Métis, where they were indigenous people, and mostly the French fur traders intermarried and had children, and there was a very unique culture that sprung up in that area. So the word Métis has been sort of taken over to mean anyone that claims any mixed indigenous ancestry. So there is a distinction there. There were no Métis settlements in Ontario. There's no historic Métis people. Métis themselves aren't indigenous in the sense that they didn't exist prior to contact. They weren't here for time immemorial. So I don't feel like it's we're against the Métis. We're against this legislation that the government has brought in without our consultation.
Going back then to the meeting of the Assembly First Nations, was there anything that the Band Council asked you to do when you were at this meeting beyond what we've just spoken about?
Well, I think any areas that we could push our agenda was key. Creating relationships with the other chiefs was important. So the Williams Treaty First Nation chiefs that were there, we kind of all stuck together. And beyond that, a lot of the Southeast regional chiefs. So you kind of stick with your regional friends. And that includes Don Maracle from Taindanega, who I've got a good relationship with. So it doesn't matter if you're Anishinaabeg or you're Mohawk, like we do have a lot of shared interests being in Ontario. So that was one of them.
Cindy Woodhouse was elected as the new national chief of the Assembly of First Nations. Can you tell us a bit about her?
Yes. So Cindy is the Manitoba regional chief. So she's one of the primary, I guess you would see them as vice chiefs of the AFN. So she was well positioned to run for this. Our council actually decided early on that we were going to support Cindy. We made it a council decision, even though it's technically a chief's decision. So I wanted to make sure that everyone was comfortable with this. And we asked some questions. I spoke with her prior to the assembly, and during the assembly, we were in contact. So I felt very comfortable supporting her, and we were just happy that that was the end result.
Now, in her speech, she outlined a number of key issues she wants to tackle during her term, and these include child welfare, housing, economic development, policing, and a lot of other issues. Are her priorities the same priorities as Alderville Band Council? In other words, is she on the right track from what she outlined from a local perspective?
Absolutely. Those issues are all the issues that we're focusing on right now ourselves, too. So we are obviously focused on the local level, but, you know, we need that support at the national level, having the ear of the federal government and lesser so the provincial government. So we need these advocates working for us to make it come from a top-down perspective that can help us out on the ground.
So then what are your takeaways from this meeting then?
I think that it was very good to get back on track and get focused again, but I do see room for improvement on procedures and how things are done. Whereas on Wednesday, which was the whole day was taken up by the vote, I feel like we could have gotten a lot of the resolution debate and passing done after we'd voted and while we're waiting for the results. So had we done that, I feel like we would have gone through all the resolutions and gotten the business that our members expect us to do.
Well, that's a wrap up of our conversation. Hey, Nara, the second thing I wanted to talk to you about today was this notion of duty to consult. It sounds like a really complex thing. Maybe we could start off with this. There are terms that many people are not familiar with. Could you explain what is duty to consult?
Well, the duty to consult is something that came around by numerous Supreme Court decisions that happened in the 90s and the 2000s, where for basically centuries, we haven't been consulted on the use of our traditional lands and the territories that we still are legally entitled to. A lot of these issues haven't been resolved yet. So many of the lands in Canada are still technically under First Nations ownership. So when companies and governments go in and do things to land, whereas in the past we've been ignored, now the Supreme Court has said, no, you can't ignore the First Nations. They have a right to be consulted on things that affect their territory in their territory. And that includes building like roads, bridges, new industry going in, pretty much anything that we would have like a archaeological or environmental concern about.
Has there been any examples locally in the past where the duty to consult has not taken place or would be a good example to help people understand?
Yes. Well, I think everyone's aware of what happened with the Greenbelt development proposals earlier in this summer. So that was an example of not being consulted. So when the premier decided that he was going to remove lands from the Greenbelt for development for his faster like home building, we knew we weren't consulted. So we all of the Ontario First Nations got together and unanimously opposed this. And most of the basis was that we weren't consulted on these changes. Who knows what would have happened if we were consulted? We still don't like Greenbelt development, but the fact that they didn't consult wasn't seen very well. And then the premier said, we are going to start consulting now after he had done it. So then that was just kind of a slap in the face to the whole duty to consult process.
The idea of duty to consult, people can consult you, but it doesn't necessarily mean they're listening. How do you distinguish those two ideas?
Well, that's a very good question. So the duty to consult process has definitely evolved since the early days of the Supreme Court decisions. It's gotten to a point now where things are very formalized. There's standards that you have to meet. We need to say that this was meaningful consultation before they can say it was meaningful consultation. We have an excellent consultation coordinator here in Alderville, Dr. Julie Kapirka. She knows the ins and outs of everything. And if something's not going the way it's supposed to, she's the first person to let them know. So it's really become a refined process, and it makes it better for us, and it makes it better for the businesses and governments and parties that are consulting with us to know that there is a standard.
You've talked about this in the big picture, but what about at the local level? What is the responsibility of municipalities in Northumberland County when it comes to duty to consult?
Well, that's a very good question. So a lot of ways the municipalities and the counties will consult us on road expansions or a new bridge that they've got to build. So I've sat down for numerous meetings about new bridges and roads, and it is the minutia, but it's important because we do have archaeological finds down there. And in the past, you know, sometimes they've been bulldozed right through. They didn't want to stop the project. They didn't want it to get behind schedule. So now there's ways that we can get around that. We will now have archaeological watching as the bulldozers are going. So if they see anything that's coming out of the ground, we're the first to know. So that's a really good process to have. It creates trust on both sides, and it makes sure that we're ensuring our cultural and historic heritage.
If you were to characterize the relationship between the band council and the county government, what would it be?
I would say it's very good. I'm friends with the mayors of the county. And in fact, tomorrow we have a joint county council meetings, which I'll be attending in person tomorrow. So it's something that we've been working hard to build these relationships. We had the county council come to Alderville a few weeks ago, where all the mayors were there, the Port Hope mayor, the Coburg mayor, Mandy Martin, John Logal from Ono Colliman. So it was really nice to have everyone in one room and just talk about the issues that are important.
All right, that's the upper municipal tier. What about the lower municipalities? Well, what's your relationship with them on an individual basis?
It's very good as well, too. So I've been all over the area, our county, the Peterborough County. Every time I go and I speak or I meet the mayors, it's always been really good. We exchange information. We get in contact afterwards. And even here in Roseneath on Saturday, I opened the new, the rebuilt Roseneath Anglican Church that had burned down in a fire a few years ago. So we had the grand reopening of it on Saturday, and I was there, and I was welcomed with open arms, and it was just a really nice coming together of Alderville and Roseneath.
So within the context of duty to consult, whose responsibility is it? Does Alderville have to show up to public meetings or to track this, or is it up to the municipalities to reach out to you?
Now it's up to the municipalities to reach out to us, the corporations to reach out to us, the government. So anytime a shovel is going to go in the ground, it's contingent upon them to reach out to us. And it always starts with an explanation of the project. And then they'll ask, would you like to engage us on this? Would you like to consult with us? So then that's when we take it back and we're like, does this really affect us? Is it something we want to engage and consult on? Because it takes a lot of our time and expense to do this. So we find if it's in our territory and there is a reason to, we will engage in consultation. But if it's outside of our area and there's another First Nation that's closer, we'd feel like it would be more their responsibility to take on the consultation process. So every single consultation request is analyzed to see if it's something we want to start on.
Where is there in the public record that demonstrates that a council has reached out to you or has made an effort to consult? Because you look through these reports that come before council or any of the motions, there's nothing ever that really is a little box or a little something or a line or two that says, you know, oh yeah, we did consult as we are required to, sort of like the same way that we have an opening statement now in council meetings. Where is this public record that shows that these councils are consulting with you?
Now, that is a very good question. I'm not sure that there is a public record for something like that. I do know that there is that checky box that says, did you consult with First Nations? So previously, that's how it was done. And that led to just ticking a box and saying that you had proper consultation. And we know that a lot of that, the times they did click that box, there wasn't actually any proper consultation. Sending an email, leaving a phone message is not what we consider consultation. So to engage in meaningful consultation, we have to have a back and forth. We have to have meetings. They have to tell us exactly what we're doing. And we have to say if we like it or we don't like it. And if we don't like it, then we discuss that. So we might not always agree, but that is part of the consultation process. So I don't think there is a public record per se, but it would be known if a consultation was going forward that would happened improperly or didn't happen at all.
In 2022, Brighton Council received an archaeological assessment for properties that were a series of recommendations on land waiting to be developed. And I know your predecessor was very upset with the council regarding the lack of consultation. Can you provide us with any updates? What is the status of that particular archaeological assessment?
That's a good question. I'd have to look into that file in particular. It hasn't come across my desk since I've been here, which makes me think that our concerns have been achieved and delayed. I do know that the former mayor and the mayor of Brighton did have a good relationship. So that leads me to think that things did sort itself out in a good way. And that, you know, that's one of the reasons why we have this consultation process, because oftentimes the proponent won't know what they're doing. They won't know that they're perhaps incensing a First Nation. So by bringing this to the table together and having this dialogue, it airs all of our concerns. So it really is a good process that way.
I guess my last question to you is this: how do you prevent NIMBYism, where Indigenous people are holding up what some people may argue is progress?
Well, that's very important. So we would have valid concerns if there's like a graveyard or something like that's very culturally significant. We feel like that should trump any sort of development for money. But at the same time, since these are our lands, a lot of the industrial proponents want to enter into like profit sharing agreements where we will actually get a percentage of the company, of the corporation, of the project that they're building. So by sharing of the wealth, that ensures that, you know, they have our support and that we have a say at the table of how things are built and how they're run from there on in. So it's if things are done right, then there's no reason why we wouldn't give our approval. But then if you're like going to, you know, build a coal plant or something, or like a big mine, that's something that we might say, you know, maybe that's not a good idea, depending on what it is. But we feel like we are protecting the environment. So if we say that we don't want something, it's probably safe to assume that the larger community out there would also be opposed to for it on the same reasons.
That was great. Thank you so much. We're now at the point in our show where I know you like to talk about a few things that are coming up in the Alderville. So please share with us what you've got this time around.
Okay. Well, thanks, Robert. So some of these announcements might be for just the Alderville members, or others are for everybody. But we have an update on the women's shelter that's had previously been slated to close. So we are repurposing the women's shelter as assisted living for elders who need an extra level of care, but still want to live independently. So we're hoping that by mid-year next year, we'll be able to bring in our first round of tenants. And I think that that's going to really help people stay in the community who want to, who otherwise might have to go into a care facility outside of the territory. Also, we're moving our library, which is currently housed in the band office. We're renovating a section of the student services facility by the solar farm, and we're going to put the library right inside the student services. So that's going to increase the ability for our students to have access to these learning materials and books. So we feel that was a really good move that should be happening in the next couple of months. We're currently under the renovation process right now. Another update is we've developed an Alderville app that we're going to use for communications with our members to get the latest information out there. We're going to be able to have polls and votes on things that are important to them. And it's good to know that anyone can download the Alderville app, even non-members of Alderville. So if you want to know like when the powwow is, or, you know, announcements of that, something that we want people to know, we'll have messages for everybody, basically. So you would be slotted into whatever interests you are. So say you're interested in health and youth and education, you would be targeted for those kinds of announcements. So non-members would just get our general announcements that we want the community to know about. Also, we're starting up our Meals on Wheels program November 2nd. There had been we'd stopped that for a little bit, but now it's back on the docket. So all of the qualified members will get one hot meal per week, and we know that it's actually a very good meal. So if you're interested, please sign up. We're also working on an emergency planning for power outages in the community. We're taking stock of all of the vulnerable members who might be affected by a power outage. Say they might be on oxygen, in a wheelchair. We're going to be able to have access them during a snowstorm, get the plows in there, get a generator hooked up, and get them power so that they can stay in their homes. So we feel like that's a really good emergency plan to have. We're also taking donations to the food bank here in Alderville. So it's open to all members of the public, the food. So you don't have to be a member to access our food bank. And we had just received a very generous donation from a member and his charitable organization, where they, like, I saw pictures of the amount of food, and it's hundreds of pounds of non-perishable food that they donate. So I guess I'll mention his name. It's Judd Smoke. Thank you very much for your donation. And we've been told that 5G wireless has been upgraded in the local towers. So if you're on Rogers, you're supposed to be getting 5G soon. I am on Rogers and I don't have it yet. So maybe they're still waiting to throw the switch, but keep an eye out for improved reception out there, everybody.
Tanner Simpson, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That was Alderville First Nations Chief Tainar Simpson. You can hear Conversations Towards Reconciliation with Simpson on the third Tuesday of the month at 4:30 p.m. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.